Like the conversations you hear on Basic Folk with your favorite roots artists? Then join Back Catalog Listening Party, a weekly podcast where you can dig deeper into their catalog. Top songwriters like Mary Gaucher, Chris Smither, Dar Williams, and Lizzie Ngo join host Mother Banjo and Anthony Earig to talk about their old albums with a live online audience. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and learn about attending live tapings at backcataloglisteningparty.com/join. Hi, and welcome to Basic Folk, where we have honest conversations with folk musicians on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. Hi, it's Cindy Howes, and I host this podcast. Thanks for finding us. Very happy to have John Moreland on the pod today. Before we get into that, let's talk about our newsletter. You hear me. If you've listened to this podcast before, you're like, oh, great, here she goes again, back on her bullshit, talking about the newsletter. Well, listen, the newsletter is king. That's what they say. You can sign up for hours once a month to let you know what's going on with the podcast, who's coming up, who's been on, how we're feeling about who's coming up and who's been on. You can sign up for that at the link in our show notes or at our website, basicfolk.com. Also, follow us on social media. We are at Basic Folk Pod. We are currently rocking and rolling on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. See you in the scroll. One more thing, we are a listener-supported podcast. If you are a contributor, thumbs up, high five, good job to you. If you're not and would like to support us, that would be great. You can give $5 or $10 a month, and it really helps us fund the podcast and keeps on keeping on for everything that we do. Okay, thank you. You can make a contribution at a link in the show notes, or you can go to basicfolk.com. I just found a noodle in my hair. I thought it was a tick, but it's a noodle. That's how my life is going right now. Listen, I hate surprises like finding a tick or a noodle in your hair. However, let's talk about this. Oklahoma's pride and joy, John Moreland, surprised us this past April with his latest album, Visitor, and I guess I'm okay with it. Moreland's gone back to a sparse acoustic instrumentation, unlike the electronic sound, which I also loved on his previous release, 2022 Birds in the Ceiling. Recently, he took a page from his wife, Pearl Rachinsky, and musician and recent tour buddy Chris Staples' book, and quit his smartphone, took a social media break, and stopped all touring for 6 months. What ensued was an incredible psychic change discovered through living electronically off the grid. Another thing that came about during experiencing this simplicity in life, an album full of songs. He would take long drives at night, bringing along his acoustic guitar and making field recordings of his new writing. All this culminated into his beautiful new record. Moreland talks about the process of unraveling himself from the smartphone, reconnecting with the acoustic guitar, and getting to know himself again during this period of quiet. He talks about how playing live is very vulnerable to him, to the point where he started taking and loving beta blockers to stave off anxiety and adrenaline. He's very candid with his current thoughts on body image. He has been known to experience body shaming online after performing live. We also get into something that's been on my mind all year. Is climbing the professional songwriter ladder worth it? Pretty sure we figured out the answer. LOL. I don't know if we did or not. But let's take a listen to a song from his new album, Visitor. This is One Man Holds the World Hostage. And then we'll get to our conversation with John Moreland on Basic Folk.
One man holds the world hostage for his petty satisfaction, to watch the chain reaction while he makes a redaction. One man holds the world hostage to satisfy the sickness,
while the rest of us bear witness. You'll say it's only business. Why do I keep feeling like we've been this way before? Why do I keep feeling like a soldier in a holy war that I never signed up for? One man holds the world hostage 'cause he's afraid of his feelings, and he's a fraud when he's dealing, no telling what he's concealing. One man holds the world hostage, bulletproof and big as Jesus, gonna do just what he pleases till it's all torn to pieces. Why do I keep feeling like we've been this way before? Why do I keep feeling like a soldier in a holy war that I never signed up for?
John Moreland, this is so awesome. Happy to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Before we begin, I want to shout out Matt Hendrickson for his Garden and Gun article on you and the new album. Very thorough and really helpful for me in getting these questions ready.
Cool.
Okay, here we go. The new album Visitor was released this past April with no advance notice or promotion. It was a surprise.
Yeah.
John, I hate surprises.
Sorry about that.
Well, I'm not a good gift receiver. I know it's like a me problem, not liking surprises, but I love surprising people. And you seem like you like to surprise people as well. It's not the first surprise we've gotten from John Moreland. Case in point, your last album's electronic sound was a little bit of a surprise. Yeah. How do you feel about being at both ends of a surprise?
Yeah, I think I like surprising people more than I like being surprised. I don't know if I ever thought about that, but now that you bring it up, I think that's probably true for me. And I like, I don't know. I guess I like stirring shit up sometimes. I don't know.
That might go back to like your punk roots.
There's something in my brain that just doesn't want to cooperate sometimes. I don't know. Yeah, there's some, I'm kind of a contrarian, I guess, but you know, for better or worse, I think as I get older, I try to not be dumb about it. Like try to be contrary about things that matter and that are worth, you know, that are worth it. But yeah, I mean, it was fun to just throw an album out there, and I felt like it would be kind of better received that way. On the last couple records, it felt like the whole advance publicity thing was just pretty useless. So I think it's been cool so far. I think it's been a good reaction. It felt like the right way to do it.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like when it comes to like whether or not you like surprising people or whether or not you like to be surprised, kind of like you can see where you fall on like the narcissism chart, you know, like if you like to be surprised and you like surprising people, you're like perfect. But like, if you like to be surprised, maybe you're a little bit more of a narcissist. Or if you like surprising people, you're like on the echoist, you know?
I feel like I'm both. I'm like, total, like mega narcissist, and also like maybe that's all narcissism, actually, like the other end of the spectrum where you're just like, everybody hates me. And I saw it's just like, that's kind of still narcissism, I guess.
Do you mind it when people try and make you feel special?
Yeah, I don't like
you
it.
You do mind. You don't like that. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Well, again, I think I really like it. And I also really don't like it.
Wow.
I don't know.
Are you a Gemini?
No, I'm a, well, okay, maybe. What am I? I think I'm a Cancer. June 22nd is my birthday. But so isn't there some like new astrology thing that's like your, everybody's signs are different now, by the way.
Oh.
There's like a,
oh,
there's
man.
Some, there's some like alternate zodiac calendar or something. And I might.
No.
Oh, okay. I'm all right.
No, I mean, you might be right, but I just can't get with it. Like oh, my okay. hometown. The interstate by my hometown recently changed all the numbers of the exit signs. Yeah. And I can't get on board with that.
That would mess me up. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not into it. Okay. Visitor, the album, was written while you were off the grid completely. No shows, no smartphone.
Yeah. I was not really off the grid, but I was off no shows and no smartphone. Yeah.
No shows, no smartphone.
Yeah.
Let's call that off the grid.
Okay.
You were not, you're not foraging your own food no. and living off a solar panel,
no.
perhaps, and getting your water from the well. But you had a flip phone, which is a big deal in these days and age. So you could call your wife Pearl Rachinsky.
Yes.
In fact, she started this before you given up the smartphone. Yeah. And I feel like she kind of has that thing going on where she tries to like make these mindful choices in order to improve quality of life. So this choice clearly had a huge impact on you to like put the smartphone away for a while. But in yeah. general, how are you influenced by Pearl's choices?
Wow. I don't know. Wow. I mean, we're such a team. I don't even think about it. So, but yeah, I mean, with this one, it was like, we're both just were, I mean, she's my tour manager too. So we tour together and we're like, if we have a rough tour, you know, we're both just like fucked up. So that's kind of like where we were at. We just both like needed a serious break. And like, I thought I'm just going to not mess with social media and I'm going to like delete a bunch of apps off my phone. And she went all the way to getting a flip phone and I was just really intrigued. And after, you know, she was like, it's kind of awesome. Like after, I think it was weird for a couple of days and she was like, oh, what am I doing? And then it was just like, this rules. And also I have to give a shout out to Chris Staples, my friend who I just toured with, and he had a song on his last record that came out last summer that was like, it's like the chorus was like, show me what I like until it burns my eyes. It's about social media and about like, and it's like, and I thought that it was, I've been listening to that record a lot. And there was a song like there's a, some of the lyrics are like, you seem to know some things you must have overheard in the afternoon. And and it's like, it sounds like it's talking about a lover or partner or whatever. And then like, I realized like a couple minutes into the song, he's talking about a smartphone and it just creeped me out so hard that I got a flip phone too.
Oh, wow. Scared straight.
Yeah.
That's what we call that. Okay. When you first gave up your phone, you told your friends and you were worried that everyone would think you were weird. And
yeah.
then you said, we were surprised because we expected to get more of like, you guys are weird vibe from our friends. But everyone was like, that rules.
Yeah.
So like, what did those reactions tell you about the state of people's relationships with their devices?
I think everybody else feels like we do. Like everybody needs a break from it, but we're all reluctant to take it. And I think also the world makes it difficult. Like something we found while we were using flip phones was like, oh, that's like hard to order food, or we're out somewhere
park
and wanted
car.
To
or
yeah, yeah or whatever. Like there's so many really basic things now that require an app for some reason. And it's like, mm-hmm. man, it's really, that was eye opening to like, and thinking about, you know, older folks that aren't super up on the smartphones and stuff. It's like, man, like life is kind of hard nowadays if you don't have one of these in some ways. And so that was really eye opening, but it also just gave me so much space in my head to like mm-hmm. write songs and think about who I am and what matters and shit like that.
Mm. When you, I think you dropped the smartphone for 6 months. You were off the road for a year. You dropped the smartphone for 6 months and then just went away. Where did you go? It says all I could find was like Oklahoma Plains. Where is it that you spent 6 months?
Here at my house in, in Bixby, Oklahoma. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't have your smartphone anymore. I was thinking that you like went to like an isolated island in Oklahoma somewhere.
Yeah, no, we were just like, we still used the internet, but we just were on a computer only. Like, I don't want to have the internet in my pocket, in my hand all the time. So yeah, we weren't like totally, like no technology or anything, but just trying to like recalibrate in a way where, you know, we can be modern humans and also not lose our minds.
Was it hard to structure like a routine in the morning? Because I'm also like, I mean, I've also tried to like put my smartphone away like at night. I plug it in like a few rooms away and try not to touch it until a certain point in the morning. And some mornings, like this morning, maybe because you've inspired me, I got up and I was like, I'm going to hang out with my dog and I'm going to journal and I'm going to meditate without my smartphone. Yeah. But it is hard to like get a routine going in the morning without having a smartphone. Cause I'm like, well, I want to listen to Up First, you know, and I want to listen to music and I can't do that without my smartphone. So what was it like to reestablish a routine for yourself without your phone?
I pretty much don't have any routine in my life. I kind of just wake up whenever and do whatever.
That's like,
but I will say though, like, yeah, things like listening to music, I didn't, before I got rid of the smartphone, I was like, I just decided I didn't want to use streaming services, but then, and then, yeah, with no smartphone, I found myself actually like listening to records that I own more, which was really cool. Like I have all these records over here that I used to listen to, and now they just sit there because you know we've all shifted to like listening on smartphones. So, yeah, it was cool to like spend time with music that I actually chose and invested money into. That was something I remember noticing that was cool. And I think that was kind of inspiring in the writing as well. But yeah, I mean, as far as like routine, I kind of just get up and do whatever. Yeah.
All right. Get up and do it. That's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to be like, fuck my routine. I'm going to get up and do what I want.
Yeah.
One thing that you did during these 6 months is that you'd go on some long drives, and that sounds really nice.
Yeah.
What has been your experience with taking a drive in relation to like trying to feel safe, feel grounded, connected? Like, what were those drives like? Were you listening to music, books? Were you singing? Were the windows down? What was the temperature? Set the scene.
Okay. Well, the temperature, you know, varied because this was happening over a whole year. So, but like, yeah, I mean, sometimes I would listen to music, usually maybe like some instrumental stuff or like, I listened to like Keith Jarrett a lot driving around the Cologne record. And, there's this guy named John Carroll Kirby that had an instrumental like kind of ambient record that I listened to a lot.
Were you listening to CDs?
No. Okay. So I had, my old smartphone that took the SIM card out took all the apps off except music, and I was just using it as an iPod. So it's just like music that I record, like recorded my own records and put them on the phone. Like that's, it was like no,
you had an iPod,
internet involved. It's, yeah. And I actually like found somebody who like takes old iPod classics and gives them like Bluetooth connectivity. And I was like thinking about getting one of those for a minute, but yeah, I just used my old phone as an iPod. So that was where the music came from. And, yeah. And I was like, there's a small town called Beggs that I'll drive to. That's just kind of chill down there. I don't know. And there's a couple lakes that I would go to. And, that's kind of something I've always done. Just, I drive a lot, I do all the driving on tour. And then when I'm home, I still just want to like drive around and think. So, yeah.
Yeah. I remember being like a dramatic teenager, early 20s person, just like going through the emotional drama of whatever is happening and just thinking like the safest place I always felt was like in my car.
Yeah, I think I feel that too, just to be, and it's also a way that, you know, you can be, you can, it takes you places. You can get out in the world and be out there, yet at the same time you like behind glass and you're by yourself in there and you feel, and it feels like sort of safe and isolated.
Yeah.
While being out in the world. And that was, I think that was important too. Cause I just in my hometown, I've gone through weird, you know, just being on tour a lot, being away and like friendships get weird and whatever. And so there's times when I have, you know, felt like, I don't know how welcome I feel or whatever. And that was all, you know, that's in my head, but like, it's just my shit. But I think during those times, like it was nice to just be able to cruise around, but feel like I'm safe in this truck.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I feel like the part of you that doesn't feel like you're welcome is also the part of you that doesn't like to be surprised, going back to an earlier.
Yeah. It's the part of me that writes songs too.
I'm sure that your brain chemistry changed while you were off the road and while you had your smartphone put away. How long did it take to like feel that change? How did you start noticing it?
It took just maybe a few weeks to start feeling like just my mind feeling a little bit more at ease and like I'm was in a better headspace. Like, yeah, probably a month or so, three or four weeks. Yeah, it's like I was so used to thinking of everything in my life through the lens of my career, I think, and through the lens of like being a public facing performer or whatever that people know about or some few people. And it was, I think I was aware that I needed to just figure out how to like just be a person and not think about that stuff. And just, yeah, like unplugging from social media and the internet really did wonders for that. And I think it probably took about 3 or 4 weeks of just not having my head in that stuff.
Yeah.
To kind of realize like, oh, I'm not as angry and I'm not as quick to like hate everyone when I'm at the grocery store or doing whatever. And I'm not like having road rage anymore. And I'm not, you know, it's like that psychic change is, I think, yeah. I've heard people call it. So, yeah.
I want to hear more about what you were, because like the people at the grocery store, the other drivers on the road, like how are you able to relate to strangers? It sounds like you were more like passionate and understanding towards them.
I think that in my career, something I've struggled with a lot is feeling like people don't get me and wishing that I could, or wishing or trying whatever ways to like sort of control what people think or what people understand about me. And I think that during that year off, I really came to realize how, like, what a bummer way to live that is. And I think I, you know, and I started just getting some practice, like, letting go. And, like, I don't, like, what someone else thinks or understands or sees is none of my business. And my job is to just do what's right for me. And, like, that was the psychic change, really. I think my whole life I've kind of been, everything I do is, like, I'm trying to calculate how it's going to be perceived and then manipulate that perception in some way. And it's just like, that's miserable. I think this is the first time in my life where I've like kind of understood, none of that matters. People get to think what they think and feel how they feel and do what they do. And it's none of my business. And I get to, like, take care of myself and do what's right for me regardless. And that was, I think that's kind of like maybe the essence of the psychic change or whatever is like, yeah. That was like the big realization. And it just gave me the space to, like, let other people be and just meet them with kindness where they're at, where, you know. And I used to be, like, frustrated that, you know, the whole world wasn't the way I wanted it to be. So,
man. You said, to write songs, I need to be by myself. I reflect a lot. That's always been a part of how I do it. The crazier the world is, the less I get that. So in this case, you were alone.
Yeah.
You and your wife were hanging out. Yeah. You were writing songs. You were driving around. How did your songwriting process differ during those months without the phone? And have you taken anything away from writing the songs on Visitor for future writing?
I think, you know, it didn't really feel there was anything new about it, but it felt like the songs just, once I was kind of in that zone where I was ready to write, it felt like it just happened really fast. Like the past 10 years, I'm usually like, if I get in, like, when I get in the songwriting headspace, maybe I'll spend a week, like, working on songs every day. And at the end of the week, I'll have two or three songs. And this time it was like that, but at the end of the week, I'd have like seven songs. And, so really, I mean, like, two or three of the songs on Visitor were written a couple years before, and all the rest of them were written in like 2 weeks last summer. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So speaking of being alone, like, do you get lonely? Like, I don't know if you were, like, lonely during those 6 months, but, like, what is your relationship to being alone, and how did it change after the 6 month experiment?
Yeah. I mean, I was with Pearl every day, so I don't feel lonely in that sense. But I think that I think loneliness probably is kind of the defining emotion of my life. and I think I'm still kind of realizing how profoundly lonely I was and have been in my life. And it still kind of, like, comes up and hurts to realize sometimes. But at the same time, I've always been really comfortable being alone. That's the conflict, I guess, is that it feels comfortable and safe to be alone, but it's also fucking lonely to be alone. So
yeah,
I've always been kind of a loner, and that feels like it's part of the songwriting thing to me. But yeah, I'm so lucky to be married to my best friend now. So, I don't think about loneliness much in the present tense. Yeah.
On loving the acoustic guitar again, you said, "I had a hunch that falling in love with the acoustic guitar and just playing for the hell of it was something I really needed to do. I hadn't really done much since my teenage years."
Yeah.
Which is cool to think of, like, you know, the reason that you started playing guitar, the reason why you started writing songs, like the initial feeling you had when you were playing music as a teenager. How did rekindling your relationship with the acoustic guitar connect you to your younger self and your original reason for wanting to play?
I think because for so long now, I've been so used to anytime I pick up the guitar, I'm like, again, it's that career lens. I'm doing it through the lens of my career. And I'm like, what am I going to write? I got to write a great song. What's the next album going to be like? What am I doing? You know, all that stuff. And last year was the first time, yeah, probably since being a teenager, that I just played the guitar with no plans and no, like, it wasn't a means to some end. It was just like bringing me joy to just make the sounds and feel the strings and the fretboard. And I think, you know, after the last couple of records too, I was like fucking around with samplers and drum machines a lot and pushing buttons. And, you know, so it was kind of cool to like just play an instrument and fall in love with just the sound of like a person playing, you know? And I also started kind of shifted to listening to like more like John Fahey and Norman Blake and stuff that just put me individual performers, you know? So yeah, and it really did feel like being a teenager, I guess, 'cause that's the last time I really played the guitar like that. I think once I was like in my 20s, I was trying to like have a music career and
yeah.
So it just, yeah, it felt like being a kid again and just playing. I think I found, my guitar, my finger picking like entirely changed last year. Like I don't pick at all the way I used to.
Oh, really?
And yeah, so that was a weird thing that came out of just playing the guitar for no reason for a year. But I could do a lot more now than I could. Like I got other fingers going in there and shit, so. It was really rewarding and kind of brought back some of that like curiosity that I had about playing music when I was younger.
Cool. In terms of lyrics, so you didn't intend to write so many songs and then you started writing music only, no lyrics, and then a ton of words came and you said, "I experienced a wave of just really wanting to write lyrics. Feeling yeah. like it was really bursting out of me,"
yeah.
which that makes me feel anxious. Like I wouldn't be able to write them all down fast enough. So for you, like how did that bursting of lyrics feel?
That was kind of that 2-week period I was talking about. And it was, I mean, it felt great because I was getting songs written and I was really liking the songs and it felt like, it felt maybe another thing that kind of was like a throwback to younger years was it didn't just feel like, yeah, this will be a good record in my catalog or whatever. It felt like this is like really hitting for me. Like this, like, I think like some of my earlier records, it felt like writing some of that stuff where it was just like, there was like maybe a bit of a desperation to it. That, cause I just felt more desperate than I had in a long time, I guess. So, but yeah, as far as like being able to get all the lyrics out, I don't know if I have that problem. Lyrics usually come in like a very slow trickle for me. So just even a little bit of an increase was still like, I can keep up, but it was
sounds
nice
relaxing.
To like, yeah, it was nice to just like, it's just songs just kept happening and it felt like I didn't have to like really, you know, work them really hard or anything. They just kept happening. So it was cool.
Beautiful. Okay. Like most people, I really struggle with body image. And I know that you've struggled as well with that in the past. Yeah. And one of the reasons you decided to get off the road and get offline was body shaming.
Yeah.
That you were experiencing while you were touring. It was like happening on the internet. It got to a point where you said it put me in a state where it was scary to play, which I'm sorry you experienced that. Knowing that, and after spending this time away, what is your relationship with your body now, and how do you try to maintain a good one? I'm asking for a friend, and the friend is me.
Cool. Yeah. Something is part of that psychic change last year. I like reached this point where I was like, God damn, I love my body. Like, I'm like, this body has brought me through 39 years of life, and it brought me to Kansas City where I met my wife, and it allows us to be together now. And this body can drive 18 hours and play, get out and immediately play a show like this, I got a good body, you know, and I started to appreciate it in that way. And it made me, and also that psychic change thing, like there's been so much, like being fat is kind of it's a weird, like, mental prison you can kind of get into where it feels like you're other, you're not enough, you're whatever, cause of your body. But then if you lose weight, then it's kind of treated like you did it. You're good enough now. You made yourself an acceptable human. Congratulations, you know? And that punk rock part of me has always been like, fuck that. I'm not giving people that, you know? And like, And reaching that point where I can just do what's right for me, regardless of what other people understand, like it's none of my business. That's been a huge part of being able to make healthier choices, that it's not about anybody but me. It's about doing what's right for me. And reaching that point where I have genuine appreciation for my body and genuine, like it makes me want to take care of it. That's really new for me. I've been self-destructive as fuck my whole life. So,
How's that newness feeling?
It's great. It's amazing. It's a little scary because I don't want to lose it, but I don't think I'm going to. I think it feels like my brain works differently now.
That's great. Do you feel like that's like a common theme for you where something good is happening for you and you feel like, well, just wait until this goes away.
Yeah.
Thanks, anxiety.
Yeah, I'm always like expecting like, something's going to fuck it up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
John. Okay. Thank you for answering that question. I loved your answer.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no problem.
You play solo when you play live, and you said it can feel vulnerable, and it's to the point where you're mentioning that you are on some beta blockers to help manage anxiety and adrenaline. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
They're great.
They sound great. What makes you feel the best and most safe on stage? Like, what can your audience do to help you feel good?
Well, okay. Like, my ideal audience is like, just be quiet during the songs. But then in between songs, let's like hang out and have fun and shoot the shit and not be stiff and weird. So I understand that feels like a lot to ask sometimes, because it's usually sometimes you get a quiet audience, but they're a little stiff and it's like, eh. And then, or you get the audience that's having fun, but they're having like too much fun and it's hard to play. So I'm kind of like, you know, I'm just grateful that people come see me. If I can, like, you know, something, because another thing I've learned is like my preference is a quiet audience, but I've also learned that, you know, different people show appreciation in different ways. And I've had shows that I thought the crowd was really chatty and nobody was listening. And then after the show, people are like quoting lyrics back to me or whatever. And I realized, okay, that's, yeah.
Isn't that funny? I've heard that from musicians before, where they like walk off stage and they're like, "Welp, I'll never work in this town again." And
yeah.
Then like 70 people are like, "You changed my life."
Yeah. And it's like, that's another thing I've learned. Just when I think it sucks, it's probably fine. Just relax.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the song "One Man Holds the World Hostage."
Okay.
Killer track.
Thank you.
Penultimate line is "One man holds the world hostage because he's afraid of his feelings." I love listening to that song and thinking about every good old boy I've ever had to work for. So basically, in that song, you're saying if we don't work through our shit, we all have the potential to turn to the dark side.
Yeah.
And before I ask this question, I do want to preference with a quote from you saying, "I'm not an expert on social issues or political issues, but man, sometimes you look around and it's just like, what the fuck?" So here's a question.
That's probably as eloquent as I can be about it.
It's a good one. After writing this song and living off the grid, so to speak, for so long, with all this time to reflect, what would you say to the one man who is holding the world hostage? What would you say to him in terms of how he could possibly feel better?
Well, I think, honestly, that song's about me. And a lot of people have asked me who it's about, and it's 100% about me. And
the secret's out.
Yeah, so I guess what I would, because I think that we all, that's like you said, like that, that's the essence of the song, that we all, it's not about finger pointing. It's about saying that, yeah, we have to like take care of our shit, be on top of our shit, or we all have the capacity to fuck each other over and make the world a shitty place in whatever ways that we do, you know? And if you're in politics, you'll be doing it on that scale, I guess. But like, so yeah, what I would say to that person is what I would say to me, which I guess is just like, you're enough and everything's okay. I don't know.
That's a good one. I remember when I was a recent college graduate, like 4 or 5 years after college. And I was like, man, all I wanted for anyone to say to me in college ever was like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You're okay. You know, and like you just never hear it. And the answer, John, is that you hear it from yourself.
Yeah, you gotta.
After all.
Yeah.
I was talking to Jeffrey Martin. I don't know if you know Jeffrey, not great songwriter from Portland.
Yeah, I've recently become familiar with his music. Yeah, but I don't know him.
He's so fucking good, and it's so annoying. And he's he's the best, actually. He was on tour, very exhausted, but was also like kind of pleased with the level of success that he was achieving in these recent tours he's been on. And he was also worried that like, if he stopped, it would all go away.
Yeah.
And he had talked to musicians who were like at a higher level than he was. And he concluded that it like might not be worth trying to get to that level. And he told me, like, you get there and you realize it's a wasteland of a real life, or of a whole life at least. And this is something I've heard you talk about a little bit. You say you don't want to take your foot off the gas because there's always that fear that it could go away. So you actually stopped. You took a break. You did the reflecting. So where are you at with this now? Like your feelings on climbing the quote unquote songwriter ladder, like where you're at and the comfort of it all.
Yeah, it didn't go away, luckily. And I think I feel a lot, you know, it's interesting, like before this break, my whole career, I've sort of felt like a new artist, I think, like, even though even on 5-6 records in, I felt like kind of a new artist. I think I was just stuck in that. Like at the beginning of my career, that was the case. And I just maybe got stuck in that view. And taking that year off and coming back now, I'm like, I'm finding all this whole new wave of Americana and roots folk artists. And I really like them more than the people my age, I think. And I feel like, yeah, it feels like I'm old now, but in a good way. I think I'm more comfortable with that. It doesn't feel like I got to prove anything. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's just been cool to like be back around again. And I think if anything, it didn't go away. And I think the shows I've played are bigger now. Cause I think just I'm in more of a headspace to like be out there and be in front of people. I'm not as hesitant to do that. And I think I'm just kind of in people's faces a little more, and they remember me and come to the shows. And yeah.
Wait, you're in people's faces more? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I'm back on social media.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I'm not out of my mind anymore and I can handle it. So
all right. So you're back on. Okay. First of all, I need to pass along a message from Jeffrey to you.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me just look it up. Cause I came across that quote from you and I was like, oh, this is exactly what Jeffrey was talking about.
Yeah.
He says,
I think a lot of songwriters get bigger, end up missing that kind of like listening room phase of your career where you can just play to small rooms that will listen.
Yeah. The last time I saw him was in a small listening room, but it was like filled. It was a good vibe. So Jeffrey says, I said, I'm talking to John Moreland. And then he sent me some thoughts. And then he said, that's a man I'd love to have a picnic with. I've never gotten to meet him, but I feel like we'd had a lot to talk about. And then he said, tell him I pack one hell of a picnic, can meet him wherever.
You know what? He's in Portland. Is that right? I'm doing West Coast in September, I think. So maybe we'll have a lunch date at a park.
That would be so cute.
Yeah. We'll be sure to take pics if that happens.
That's great. Now I had a question off the script and I can't remember what I was going to ask. So let's just move on.
Okay.
So you stepped away from playing shows for a year and it seems like you discovered the power to say no and put your needs first. So like, what does that power feel like for you?
It feels great. It feels like that's another thing about having a music career. You think it's going to be super awesome and like freeing and what, and it's not, it's kind of like, I'm sorry, what, tell me the question again.
What does the power to say no and power to put yourself first feel like?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think earlier in my career, I had that, you know, that new artist mentality, like I got to just do everything. And I didn't want to say no to anything because it felt like any little thing could be like the thing that breaks me or helps me get, you know, like, helps me get ahead, you get a break. And, you know, my manager's always super cool about like, you can say no, but I just really like her and don't want to let her down. And so I think I had trouble saying no. And, now she's like, I think she knows enough to like, sometimes I'll say yes to stuff and she'll be like, you can say no. Like, it's, you know, like she knows, so she'll like catches me when I'm saying yes to stuff that she knows I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And, but I'm getting more comfortable with it. Yeah. With like knowing that, like, and I'm feeling like, yeah, probably the first time that that's again, that new artist thing. It's like, you're the business and everybody else is working for you, but it's really hard to feel that way because you want to be in the music biz and these are all your people that can help you do it, you know? So like it can kind of feel like you're working for them sometimes. And I think this is the first time in my career that it doesn't feel like that. It feels like I'm the one with the autonomy and they work for me.
Wow. It sounds like, okay, the thing that I was going to bring up with you is that it sounds like the answer to all of these problems that you've had is to just like get older and wiser.
Yeah.
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 It seems like all of this going off the road, giving up your smartphone was to achieve a simple life. And this is something I've really yearned for myself and would love to hear, like after this experience, what does a realistic, simple life look for, like, what does a simple life look like for like a midlife working professional in 2024, perhaps female living in Maine named Cindy?
Well, I don't know. I know for me, I think it looks like, just like I've been blessed with this career where I can like express myself and play songs I made up, and people trade me money for that. And, I'm just so grateful. I want to keep doing that. And I want to try to do what's right for me and be like, you know, consider what's right for me in my career decisions. But also I realize a lot of ways that I have sabotaged my career a little bit too, or shot myself in the foot because I'm a little scared to, I mean, when you get body shamed super hard on the internet, it makes you feel like, I don't want to be any bigger. I don't want more people to know about me, like, cause it's just going to mean more of that. And, so things like that, like, I don't want to play myself because of dumb shit like that. Like, I want to show up for myself and try to, you know, let good things happen to me if they're going to. But at the same time, yeah, I don't want to shoot for, I think earlier in my career, bigger artists that I toured with and opened for, I'd kind of get in this headspace where I would see the way they do things and think like, okay, that's the way, that's how you do it or whatever. And I've realized like, there's kind of no right way, and there's just what's right for you. And I got to like consider what's right for me, while at the same time, I don't want to like sell myself short either. Mm.
Yeah. There's no right way and no one knows what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
The end.
Yeah.
We already talked about my last question. When you put the smartphone away, how you listen to music. So it sounds like records.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you. So I did this thing. So like, I am not a practicing Catholic, but I do like giving up things for Lent. Mm-hmm. And last year, the thing that I gave up was looking at my phone between 10 p.m. and 10 a.m. No, it was 6 p.m. and 10 a.m.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. And I listen to music all the time. Like, yeah. I'm a radio DJ. I love music. I listen to music for the podcast. So what I did is I took an old iPod. I had one of those iPod touches. Mm-hmm. And anytime like a musician would send me like a wave file that I wanted to listen to. So previously, like I had made a monthly playlist on Spotify, but now I use Tidal. Uh-huh. So instead of making that playlist on Tidal, I would make it on like Apple iTunes. Mm-hmm. And it was like the most difficult thing to figure out how to put files onto this iPod because you have to like go within the depths of your computer to try to find like where you drag and drop on the iPod.
Yeah.
Cause it's such an old device that my computer's like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then it didn't have Bluetooth, so I had to like listen in a headphone jack and stuff.
Right.
And
yeah.
It sounded all, I gotta say, like they were all wave files because like I'm a DJ, so I like want to get the wave file and everything sounded awesome.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, but it did. It was like, I just was recording. Yeah, I got like, I would record my records on the computer as WAV files and then just like, but I did end up getting some third party software that like makes it easy to just drag and drop stuff to Apple devices. So, yeah.
Okay. But did your computer knew what your phone was?
That's true. Right. Yeah, that's
my
true.
Computer I wasn't was like I what I
okay. Yeah.
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 But I only did it for a month, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna get back into the, you know.
Yeah.
I really gotta say, Tidal is pretty good now. It's like a little quirky, but I have both Tidal and Spotify. But
I have all of them, but I use Tidal the most, and I guess I have all of them because I just like being able to like easily share music with friends. But And so I just have all the different ones that anybody might use. But yeah, Tidal is definitely my preference though.
Same here. Cool. Yeah. I'll send you all sorts of Tidal playlists.
Hell yeah, please do.
Yeah. So before you go, John Moreland, will you do a lightning round?
Oh gosh, that sounds terrifying. I'll try.
No, it's you're gonna love it.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna be so good. Okay, here we go.
All right.
What is the ideal speed limit for a night drive?
70.
Wow. Wait, is that the posted speed limit in
Where am I
Oakland?
Going? I mean, where are we? I don't know. Where?
Listen, this There's is your 80, world. This, I'm just living in it.
On the Turner Turnpike, the speed limit's 80.
No way.
We drive fucking fast in Oklahoma.
Yeah. You gotta get there.
Well, there's not a lot of stuff to run into, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Who is your co-pilot on the night drive?
Pearl.
What is your favorite scented candle?
It's vanilla.
Come on. No, it's not vanilla.
I don't know.
You have to come back to me with that one.
Okay. Pearl's in charge of the candle scents. I'm just like, that smells good. I don't know what they are.
Do you like a floral profile or like a spice profile?
I'm going to say floral.
Okay.
Yeah.
Floral profile. Like lavender is usually.
Lavender's, yeah, that's my answer. Lavender.
Great. Wonderful. Glad we got there.
Yeah.
What is one instrument you wish you could play?
Piano.
If Visitor was a flavor of ice cream, what would it be?
Matcha. It's green because it's green.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or pistachio, also a good option.
But I think matcha is more... Matcha kind of tastes like dirt, and I think that's what Visitor would taste like.
Okay, I like that. All right. What is your favorite Oklahoma treat?
What does that mean? Weed, I guess.
like I'm in Maine. My favorite Maine treat is a lobster roll.
Weed's pretty big here, so I'm gonna go with weed.
You're staying with weed. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the last question. Where is the most beautiful place in the world?
Rural northern Norway.
Ooh.
Driving from Trondheim to Bergen.
Nice.
Thought I was gonna die, but it was beautiful.
70 miles an hour.
Yeah, on the little mountains, dirt road.
Great.
On the side of a mountain, and there's like more waterfalls than you've ever seen at one time.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
That sounds amazing.
It's pretty, like, driving in Norway, I'm always like looking out the van window, just like, this is like so cinematic. Like, it's crazy. It just, Norway looks like Lord of the Rings to me or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. All right. That's it. That's the lightning round.
Okay, cool.
We did it. We did the whole thing.
I survived.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to me. Congratulations on Visitor.
Thank you so much.
It's actually like really wonderful to speak with you. You are a very fun, charming person to talk to, and
well,
I appreciate
thank you.
It.
Likewise.
Oh, great. Well, listen, I can't wait for the Jeffrey Martin, John Moreland picnic photo session.
Yeah, the photo shoot is going to happen. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Basic Folk this week was produced by Anthony Cabrera, and shout out to Anthony for putting up with me. Very much appreciated. Good work. Our music is composed by Alex Stanton. Basic Folk is on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can find all of our episodes there, wherever you get podcasts. You can search for us on the SiriusXM app under Basic Folk. Check us out on FolkAlley.com or on Folk Alley's mobile app. Or you can go to our website, basicfolk.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. Like maybe that lady that you lost touch with because she was training your dog and then was never available when you were available, so you just stopped signing up for dog training. And also, like, your dog seems fine, so I don't think you need to do it anymore. But it's been a long, hard road with the dog training. But yeah, send it to her. I think she would love it. Okay, I'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Bye.